Many stories have emerged from the Australian wildfires that give us hope. It's easy to hear the rallying cry about climate change, the ever-increasing extreme storms affecting our planet, humanity's belief in their own superiority and perceived unlimited economic growth. But almost in spite of all that, there have been moments of hope. I was reading online this week about the Australian wombat. How the southern hairy-nosed wombat digs burrows with nearly, depending on, you know, how industrious they are, 28 entrances and nearly 90 meters of tunnels. In the midst of the fire, stories were going round of the wombat sharing their burrows with other animals, and even at one point, shepherding animals into their holes. Now, most of that seems to have been rose-colored glasses as we look for any life amidst the ash. As one person said, my suspicion is that burrow sharing will have been limited, and most likely to only have happened when the fire was passing, one professor said. I can't imagine longer-term cohabitation being tolerated by the wombat owning the burrow. Wombats are known to be highly territorial creatures with complex burrow systems. These burrows can feature sub-tunnels with multiple entrances, meaning a wombat and another creature meeting in the tunnels is unlikely. So what if the truth of that story is that wombats dig deep and complicated tunnels, and that while the fire passed, animals ducked in, thankful that the wombat didn't happen to be at the end? There's still praise due to the wombat, whose very nature was to create an opportunity for others. There's still a sense that in the midst of terror and tragedy, that we're all in this together. With a similar sentiment, the prophecy and scrolls of Isaiah were shared and written. God's people had been defeated and their temple destroyed. They're taken in chains to Babylon, alienated from their land and their God. The exile is a crisis of identity and faith. Are they still God's people? How can they worship, feeling so separated from God? It was during this time of exile that many of the stories of Israel were actually spoken and written down. The leaders knew that to preserve their identity, their unique story and call, that they would have to remind the people that we're all in this together. God was named and felt, but seemed at a distance. Their troubles seemed to outweigh their blessings, and while the prophets pointed to God, the people doubted. And they worried that just because things looked bleak, that God had somehow not prepared for these difficult times. Passages like these were like wombat holes, reminding the people of God that provisions had been made. For it's in the times of terror and tragedy that it becomes even more important to remind ourselves that we're all in it together. Because this particular passage moves from a very unique and powerful deliverance of Israel to an even larger mission. In an astonishing phrase, one scholar said, God says that this restoration of Israel is too important in and of itself. God's people do not exist for themselves alone, nor is their restoration an end in and of itself. God gathers God's people into a shared life for one purpose, the salvation of the world. God charges Israel, God's servant, to be a light to the nations, that my salvation may reach to the end of the earth. Pre-exile, the people of Israel were really worried about themselves. They were all consumed with their stories out of Egypt and God's hand as it guided them to the promised land. Their heads got big with self-importance and they looked down on other peoples for their lack of chosenness. If you grew up in a family with more than one child, there was always a favorite. Yeah. Ooh, he's a minister. Anyway. My grandma loved me. Anyway, there's always that one that a parent or grandparent does a little more for, who gets forgiven a little bit easier. It's not like they love the others less. Never mind. Anyway. But there's subtle things that feed the ego of that favorite and make them believe they're just a little bit more special. Because when we read the book of Israel, the story of this chosen favorite people, often the stories feed their egos and create a story of people more important than the rest. So when stories come similar to that of Isaiah 49, they need to be lifted up. Because while Israel may have been blessed, the prophet Isaiah reminds Israel that with great power comes great responsibility. As Donna shared, God says, "That's not a big enough job for my servant, just to recover the tribes of Jacob, merely to round up the strays of Israel. I'm setting you up as a light for the nations, so that my salvation becomes global." That's in the words of the message that makes it a little bit easier to understand some of the prophetic texts, such as Isaiah. It's too important to just concern yourselves with your own tribe. It's too important for Israel alone to receive this message of hope. Being a favorite does nothing if the rest of the family suffers. We're all in this together. When I got home yesterday, I was tired. I hadn't had lunch. I had a headache. And the combination was made worse because it snowed. And I was borrowing a car that we only learned afterwards had summer tires. And after I finally got to my street, after being stuck three times, spinning my tires as much as I was slipping on the ground because I wore nice shoes, dress shoes, out in the snow. Good job, Chris. And when I got stuck literally feet from my house, I panicked. Absolutely panicked. I called home for help. Out came Jen and Nahum, shovels in hand, more prepared than I was to deal with in terms of that car stuck helpless at the bottom of our street. I left them with the car, ran home to get boots on and mitts and all that stuff, so I was better equipped to get the car hopefully home into the driveway. And when I got back, it was amazing because they weren't alone. Out of the cars and homes and burrows came these wonderful Canadian wombats, ready to lend a hand and a shovel because we were all in it together. It was everything or nothing yesterday. And thank God for these neighbors whom I'll say I have never met and may never meet again because we hide in our burrows. But I think we downplay our own importance because it seems we cannot have the impact that we want to have on this planet. And the argument could be made that the wombats didn't turn the tides of the fires or dismiss the notion of animals hiding in the burrows altogether. But man, I like that story. And it lifted up a quote for me from Dr. Martin Luther King, whose birthday was remembered this week. "If I cannot do great things, I can do small things in a great way." We may dismiss the impact that we may have, but burrows saved lives, as hope shared with the Israelites spread as light for all to see. We may not be able to do great things, but the small things that we can do can add to the greatness of this world. And the gifts that we offer may seem small, but they make us feel less alone, not left alone. I mourn this time a little bit because the idea of snowflakes has been co-opted by our culture. The idea of our uniqueness has been something that's been turned on its head, as if we melt whenever troubles come. And yet, if we don't celebrate our special, unique gifts, the things like the gift of the wombats digging these amazing burrows, if we don't celebrate the little things we do that impact people in huge and powerful ways, then we'll never pull together, which is exactly what those who use that term snowflakes want. They want us to remain separate. They want us to feel like the world melts us. And yet it's even more reason to remind the kids and us that we have a special purpose, a light for the world to see that is supposed to pull us together, that we stick together like snowballs to bring joy in a world otherwise seemingly cold. Thanks be to God for the gifts given to us, not to make our heads big, but so that our hearts might overflow with hope. Amen. So I'm super glad we didn't cancel church.